Now on The Pulse, useful and healthy information for you and your family. It's Northeast Delta Dental Radio with Tom Raffio and the Northeast Delta Dental Team.
Welcome to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. I'm Tom Raffio for Northeast Delta Dental Radio, and I'm also the head coach of the dental insurance company known as Northeast Delta Dental. Well, it's hard to believe it's already January 28th and January 29th, depending on when you're listening to this. And for my running and winter wild friends, if you're listening to this on Saturday, it is the Ragged Mountain running up and down Ragged Mountain. And that's on Saturday, the 28th. And then for my snowshoe friends, on Sunday, the 29th, we have the Beaverbrook snowshoe race. I've really been getting into these winter series. Well, everybody's in a good mood, I know, because the Patriots won. I think the game was actually closer than the score indicated, but my guest and I can sort of dialogue about that. So with me this weekend is the world-famous, having just called his 1,400th straight Monarchs game, Ken Kill. Ken, thank you for joining me this weekend, the 28th and 29th. I know you have me on your show on Fridays, but it's great that you could join me this weekend.
Tom, it is my distinct pleasure. Thank you very much for having me on.
It's awesome. And for the listening audience, people should know, and I've talked to a lot of sports fanatics like myself, and we all agree that Ken is indeed one of the best hockey announcers you could ever hear. So, Ken, tell us about your career. When I first ran into you, I think it was at Holman in Nashua.
Historic Holman Stadium.
There
yes.
you go. Yeah. So, tell us your career. Obviously, at least from all of our conversations when we talk about the Bruins and the Red Sox in the '60s and '70s. Seemingly, you grew up in the Boston area, so maybe tell us about that, but also how you got into announcing both from a professional perspective, but also, you're also a talk show host, so how you got into all of that.
Well, I wanted to get into broadcasting probably since I was 7 or 8 years old. I mean, I was kind of a geek, I guess, because when my friends and I would play wiffle ball in my backyard or wherever it might be, I would try to broadcast the wiffle ball games.
So you were like Ken Coleman, right?
Yeah. I tried to be like Ken Coleman. He was the voice of the Red Sox at that time, or was soon to be after Curt Gowdy left the team. So I grew up on Red Sox and Curt Gowdy and Ken Coleman and Ned Martin and the Celtics with Johnny Most and the Bruins with Bob Wilson and the Patriots with a myriad of announcers, and finally Gil Santos and Gino Cappelletti.
Right, so you remember
time.
Bob Starr was
I
the
do.
Patriots
Bob announcer. Starr was the voice of the Patriots when he was the news anchor, the sports anchor on WBZ-TV.
And I remember Johnny Most even doing a post-Red Sox games things on TV.
I recall. I think it was the Wheaties scoreboard.
The Wheaties scoreboard. You got that. And, of course, you didn't mention, but there was another great hockey announcer, Fred Cusick.
Fred Cusick, yes, indeed. And I actually had the chance to meet and be with Fred quite a bit after his Bruins career, when he did some games on local cable television during the early days of the Lowell Lock Monsters in the American Hockey League. So Fred was a terrific guy, and they all were. All the people I've mentioned that I've had a chance to meet were terrific guys. And the one who was most responsible for my career moving forward was Bob Wilson. I remember being at the first Boston Braves hockey game.
Now, for people to level set the audience, the Bruins were so hot in the 70s, they actually had an AHL team that played out of the Boston Garden. And at least for a couple of years, there'd be sellouts all the time, right?
They would be, especially when the Nova Scotia Voyageurs came into town, the Montreal affiliate in the American Hockey League at that time. And yeah, I mean, they would draw tremendous crowds. In fact, at one time, the Garden housed three professional teams: the Bruins, Braves, and the New England Whalers.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was quite a difficult job scheduling all those games, in addition to the Celtics being there as well. So some of the Whalers games had to be moved to the old Boston Arena, now Matthews Arena in Boston. But the first AHL game that I saw, and the first AHL game that was played at the Boston Garden, Boston Braves, and I believe it was the Cleveland Barons, actually, on a Friday night. I was there with a friend of mine. And I was, I think, 16 at the time. And I always thought about broadcasting. So I looked up in the broadcast booth. Bob Wilson did some of the Braves games when he could squeeze them in between Bruins broadcasts. So he was up there and all he had was an engineer who was, you know, setting up the equipment and, you know, moving the dials and, you know, telling him he sounded great and all that stuff. So I wrote the very next morning a letter to Bob Wilson telling him that I was going to Melrose High School and that I was a longtime Bruins fan and a Celtics fan and what have you, and that I had always wanted to get into broadcasting. And I'd be willing to you know, come in and keep stats for you, or run for your coffee, whatever it is you know, that you wanted me to do. But I had written a number of those letters in the past, and either you got a form letter back or no reply at all. But this was written on Saturday morning. I mailed it as soon as I could. I mailed it so I knew it would be picked up on Saturday. Went down to the mailbox. Monday afternoon, I was out in my backyard. This was in October, playing with my friends and probably wiffle ball. And I remember my father yelling to me from the back porch that Bob Wilson was on the phone.
Wow.
So I, well,
so you jumped
know,
in the
I,
house,
was a,
huh?
I was a little leery about it. I said, yeah, maybe they're trying to pull a fast one because they knew I had written a letter to Bob on Saturday. So I thought this was a little bit too quick. I mean, this is almost.
So you thought there was a prankster.
So I, you know, I said, hello. And as soon as he said hello back, I knew it was the real deal because he had a one in a million voice.
Well, you know, and that's, and you do as well. And I think for people that don't remember Bob Wilson, not only was he an accurate announcer and it was beautiful and it's his simplicity, but he also had a great voice like, you know, like yourself. So that must have been pretty cool.
It really was. So he said, this was a Monday, I remember. And the next Braves broadcast was on Friday of that week. So he asked me to meet him at the press gate at the old Boston Garden. And we'll see how it worked out. So, obviously, it worked out okay because he kept me on. I kept the Braves stats for the rest of that season when they had a broadcast at the Garden. And then the next year, his statistician was transferred in his job. He worked for Delta Airlines, his Bruins statistician, and was transferred to Atlanta. So then I moved in and kept stats for the Braves and Bruins broadcasts.
So Delta Airlines, Delta Dental, I'm connecting
there
the dots.
There you go. See, yeah.
Now, there was another announcer in there in that time, too, Don Rowland, TV 38. Again, my kids don't understand. At one time, there was Channel 4, 5, and 7, and then Channel 38 and 56. Of course, now there's a plethora of channels out there. So Don Rowland, when Channel 38 would start covering the TV game. So he was a pretty good announcer, too.
Yeah, Don was very good. No question. I never really met Don Earl, but, you know, he was, a very good broadcaster. And that was at the time when, you know, the picture was a little snowy. Even if you lived in the Boston area like you did and I did at the time, you had to hold on to that antenna, keep it in place so you could see the games at least, you know, almost clearly.
What we liked as kids was... the Bruins would normally make, this was right after the expansion of the NHL, and they went from 6 to 12, and they would make a West Coast trip generally during February school vacation.
Right.
And Channel 38, a couple years earlier, they would do it on tape delay, but then they started actually doing it at 11 o'clock at night, and our mom and dad would let us watch the game at 11 and like go to bed at 1:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
But you could do that.
On vacation,
It was school vacation.
Yeah. Well, you know, Fred Cusick, you mentioned Fred. He was actually the first guy to put the Bruins on television. And amazingly enough, what he used to do on a Saturday night, he would drive up from his home in the Boston area and drive to Montreal. Fred would actually film the game himself at the old Montreal Forum. Then he would drive back after the game, go to the WMUR studios on Elm Street in Manchester, and that old big Victorian house at the time. He would edit everything down to an hour, voice it, and they would run it from 11 a.m. to noontime on WMUR, wow. The previous night's highlights.
The precursor to the Bruins in 2.
That's right.
Who needed no stinking iPhone when you had Fred Cusick?
That was a Bruins in 1, actually, with Fred Cusick. I mean, it was unbelievable. He was telling me these things.
That is crazy.
And as a kid, I do remember that show, and I do remember the Bruins being on WMUR. But I didn't know that he was going up there and editing, filming, editing, voicing, doing the whole thing. It was all him.
How crazy is that?
Yeah.
So this week, I think you called your 1,400th straight Monarchs game. Tell us about that. Do I have my facts correct?
You are correct. You are correct. Thanks to our statistician, Patrick Cavanaugh, who figured it out how many games I had done.
So you've done it since the inception.
Yes, I have. Yeah, since October of 2001. And the first game I ever did was in Lowell, Massachusetts at the Songus Arena. And my color analyst that night was the legendary coach, Pat Burns.
Since departed us, and Pat lived in New Hampshire for
years. He did, yeah, he did. And I'll tell you what, I have to say that it's probably the most intimidated I've ever been doing a broadcast. I mean, it was the first professional hockey game that I had ever broadcast. I had done high school and some college, and it was the first professional game I had done. And here is Pat Burns, you know, kind of an intimidating figure anyway, sitting next to me. Doing the game with me, but I tell you what, he could not have been nicer. And I think in that first year with Pat Burns as a part-time analyst and Rick Middleton as well, I learned more hockey in like 20 games with them than I knew up until that time, without question.
That's awesome. And the Songus Arena it's near and dear to me. My twin sons used to play a lot of hockey at the Songus Arena. It's a great arena.
It is. Oh, yeah, it still is. Yeah, absolutely.
So we have about 45 seconds. Can you just give us the thumbnail sketch for the listening audience, the difference between AHL and ECHL?
Well, basically, it's if you want to compare it to anything, it would be like AA and AAA baseball. You know, obviously, the American Hockey League would be the AAA and the ECHL, the AA. And I tell you what, in the ECHL, you get some outstanding players that have played top-flight college programs, junior programs, and there are now well over 650 players who have had time in the ECHL that have played in the National Hockey League. They're not all there now, but I mean, since the ECHL has been in existence for 28 years, over 650 players.
And that's
players.
What people don't understand. Yeah. These players are still, a lot of them will get to the NHL. So we'll return with more of the world-famous Ken Keel after commercial break. Please stay tuned. Welcome back to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. Tom Raffio this weekend with Ken Keel, Saturday, January 28th and 29th. I want to give a big shout out to Sally, who was my guest last week, Sally from the Prescription Center. She gave out a lot of information I had a lot of people come up to me and said, geez, I wish I could have a transcript of the show. So we don't have that, but if you go on to the northeastdeltadental.com website, there's a radio section on there, and if you click on that show, you'll be able to hear of Sally and nutrition. And if you have any questions for Sally, you can go right down on Main Street to see her at the Prescription Center. Reminder for my running friends, Saturday the 28th is the Winter Wild Series at Ragged Mountain, and Sunday, January 29th is the snowshoe race at Beaverbrook. So back to Ken. So we talked about various announcers, Bob Wilson, Fred Cusick, Don Earl. So when you're a little kid, these are the things that intrigue you, because one of the announcers, there was a player on the Los Angeles Kings, and of course in those days the Kings stunk. They were an expansion team.
Right, they were an expansion team, yeah.
So they had the they had the fastest glove in the West. You know who that was?
Is that Rogie Vachon?
No, Gary Desjardins.
Oh, Desjardins,
so
okay.
So one of the announcers would pronounce it Desjardin, and the other one would pronounce it Desjardins. Yeah. So when you're a little kid, you think there's two different guys, but right. It was the same one.
Yeah.
But the big one was, there was this foreign player. In those days, you didn't have a lot of foreign players, Whitey Whiting, but one of them pronounced it like in the native language, Yuha Viting or something. So we're thinking it's two separate guys, but Whitey Whiting and Yuha Viting was the same guy, as was Gary Desjardins and Gary Desjardins. But remember, Gary Desjardins would make they would lose like 9-2, but he would make like 60 saves.
Right, right. Now, that was not unusual in that era, that expansion era, when they went from 6 to 12 teams. Right,
the
right?
Bruins would get the 7 goals against them. And
yeah.
That year that they broke all the records but lost to the Montreal, like they almost averaged like 5 goals a game, with just, I think, short of by one goal. So we were talking about the new Monarchs and then the AHL. So one of the things that I like about the ECHL is they try things. So tell us about, there was a very compelling All-Star game. So tell us how that was.
Yeah, it was. It took place a couple of weeks ago now at Glens Falls. The Adirondack Thunder was the host team. And in the last several years, they've experimented, or the last several All-Star games, they haven't always had one. They don't have one every year. But when they have had them in recent years, the home team, the host team, has played the ECHL All-Stars. And that was the case this year with Adirondack hosting the ECHL All-Star game. So they played the first half, 25 minutes. All right, 25-minute half. Then they pause for about a half hour for the skills competition. Sometimes when they have those All-Star games, they have the skills the night before and the game the next night. But in this case, they did it all on one night in Glens Falls. So they paused for about a half hour between the first half and the second half for the skills. So they started the second half with 25 minutes on the clock. But the first stoppage after the 10-minute mark in that second half, they went to 4-on-4 hockey. And then they played 10 minutes that way. And then the first stoppage after the next 10 minutes, they went to 3-on-3 hockey.
Which is awesome, wide open, right?
It is. The fans love it. I mean, they really do. I mean, I know there are some people who go to games, whether it be in the ECHL, the AHL, or even the NHL. A lot of fans, if they're kind of ambivalent about the outcome, they're just rooting for overtime to see that 3-on-3.
The wide open hockey.
Oh, it's great. People love it. And, it's a drastic departure from the regular format of professional hockey games, but I don't know if they would ever consider experimenting with that on a regular basis. I think it would be something worth exploring, because at some point in your career, as you go forward, you're always going to be playing some 4-on-4, and you're going to be playing some 3-on-3.
And with the players so big now, we were talking about this last week, but like when you watch the Big Bad Bruins from the 70s, obviously you can see how compelling a player Bobby Orr was. And there were some big players then, like Pete Mihaljevic or whatever, who was like 6'5". But right now, they're all 6'5", it seems, or a lot of them. And there was much more open ice. So they've got to do something. And I don't know if that's, saying, 5 years from now, all the rinks have to be Olympic size or something. Because they always say they can't do it because they would have to modify these stadiums. But if you give people enough lead time, but something has to give, I think.
Yeah, I would have to think so. Right now the game seems to be pretty successful. And on the NHL level, a lot of the teams are drawing nearly 100% capacity every night. And a lot of the AHL teams are doing well. And, the Monarchs' attendance is on the upswing in this second year under new ownership this year, after the first year being owned by the LA Kings. And now the Kings have sold the franchise, and the new owners are trying some things to get some people in there, and they've done a pretty good job. But I think in terms of the players being as big as they are, that would be, players say there's a huge difference. It takes a while to get used to that Olympic sheet, as it were. But I think it's a great advantage, like for a team like UNH, which has one. When other teams come in, I think they're at a distinct disadvantage. But it would take some reconfiguring of the buildings that are already in place in the NHL.
I don't know. Men went to the moon in 1969. Yeah, I think we can.
I think they could figure it out. I think you're right. I think they could figure it out.
Too funny. Now, since you mentioned the NHL, I mean, the Bruins are selling out, but they're kind of struggling. So do you think Coach Julien Claude will be around for the rest of the season?
You know what? I may be one of the odd people here, but I think he will be, and I wouldn't be a bit surprised. I don't know. If the Bruins don't make the playoffs again, they've got to do something. And
if it ended now, they would squeak in, right?
Yeah, they would squeak in if it ended right now. But I'm not laying the blame, solely on him. I mean, there have been a lot of mistakes made, I think, by the organization, trading away some great talent. I mean, Tyler Seguin is one.
Kessel.
Dougie Hamilton's another one. And The list goes on and on.
It seems like anytime they get these good young goal scorers, Sagan, I mean, I know Kessel had some issues, but yeah. I mean, like, work with these people. The whole league is peppered with these ex-Bruins that are doing well.
And well, look at even Joe Thornton. Look at his longevity, and that was years ago. I mean, Mike O'Connell made that trade.
That was one of the worst trades. I know Joe Thornton hasn't won the Stanley Cup and all the usual stuff you hear, but, I mean, Joe Thornton was to me, an awesome, and that was a very bad trade. So let's segue now into the Patriots. So we saw them play against Pittsburgh.
I did.
And, you know, even though the score, you know, was whatever, 18 points, I mean, I'm a big believer that things change on, like, the slightest thing. So let me give you, like, two or three different examples. Had Brady's quarterback sneak been ruled a fumble that Pittsburgh recovered, instead of the Patriots going in to score a touchdown, could have been the Pittsburgh, and now the game is really close.
Yeah.
The Pittsburgh had two touchdown passes dropped.
Correct.
I know they're young receivers. That happens.
Yeah.
Also, you know, had the instant replay not revealed that it really wasn't a touchdown, it would have gotten closer then. So all of these things, little things here and there, and instead of being an 18-point game, it could have been a nail biter. So I think it was closer than people the score indicates. But I also think the Patriots were definitely the better team, including. And being tougher, too.
Well, absolutely. And certainly they took advantage of every opportunity. But I think that that play that at the goal line, which was, as you pointed out, originally ruled a touchdown and then was called back, and the Patriots put on a great goal line stand after that. I think that's the series that really turned the momentum around in that game. I mean, if that had been a touchdown, if it had stood, if the call had stood, and obviously it was not, as we saw in the replay, but if the call had stood, that could have made a big difference in that ball game, I think, momentum-wise, because Pittsburgh would have also had the ball to start the second half as well.
Exactly, and then the Patriots got lucky in that Bell had a groin injury, but the guy that replaced him, Williams, actually
did well, and it was actually, for a while,
did better because they weren't expecting his kind of more straightforward running that, you know, without the hesitation. So I don't think that has had as much to do with it versus, as they always say in football, if you, the team that makes, you know, a couple more plays than the other team, and also the turnovers, the Patriots did not have turnovers and Pittsburgh had two.
And the Patriots, so many weapons, really. I mean, you think of the fact that, you know, Rob Gronkowski watching the game in a suite, but I mean, and still they have a ton of weapons out there. And Chris Hogan emerges.
Chris Hogan ends up being in the slot.
Yeah,
and then who knows? It might have actually been a better thing. The one thing I couldn't figure out, like the Patriots started, no one in the backfield. They just passed and there was a drop. Otherwise, they probably would have scored a touchdown. But they got a quick field goal. And they stopped Pittsburgh. And then the Patriots, next time they had the ball, Brady was under center running the ball, and they got nowhere. But where that came in handy later, that made the flea flicker unbelievable.
Yes.
So people don't kind of see the big picture.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, there's always a master plan that they put together, and I'm sure Coach Belichick is well into planning now for the Atlanta Falcons next weekend.
So two questions in the minute and 15 seconds we have. So where was Michael Lloyd, and then how do you think they're going to do against Atlanta?
Yeah, where is he? I don't know. There's another weapon that they did not use
yesterday.
He could
be a really good slot receiver.
Yeah. But I don't know. And how will they do against Atlanta? I think that's going to be a high-scoring game. I really do. Both, I think, high-powered offenses. And now when I say that, it's probably going to be, you know, like a 17-10 game or something like that. But I can see conceivably a lot of points being put on the board with Brady and Matt Ryan going at it.
So who do you think has more pressure, Brady winning his fifth Super Bowl or Matt Ryan needing to win one Super Bowl to be considered an elite quarterback?
I mean, Brady, is putting probably more pressure on himself than anybody is putting on him. Because he is on a mission. I mean, he is on a mission to stand on that platform next Sunday.
All right, give me the final score in the 15 seconds that
15 seconds we have left. 35-27 Patriots.
Like it. All right, Ken, thank you so much. It's such a pleasure working with you. Thank you for all you do for professional sports here in Manchester. Tom Raffio will return next weekend with more of Northeast Delta Dental Radio.